putting all the, like sending the message from the client to the server to execute? Why are they, do they not all reside on the server? Is that because, like from this one?
Right,
this one.
Okay. Right, okay. So the question here is now for the last example, we send some task from the client to the server and execute that task on the server. So why we actually want to do that? So why to start with, we don't have that class stored on the server and just run it on the server? Is that your question?
Yes.
Okay. So here, in that example, you can see that now we have a server which provides some services to other clients, right? So in this case, the service being provided by the server is that, well, it says that I can post the computation that you want to send to me. So I have some very specialized hardware, so high-end hardware, and it can perform various number crunching tasks. So, for example, for this client, it has some computation-intensive task, right? So if I run this task on my own machine, for example, I only have a PC. So if I want to run this task on my own machine, it might take a week for me to get a result, right? So in this case, well, I discovered that this guy is providing this service that can execute the task for me, right? So in this case, I simply send this task to the server so that the task will be executed by the server. So I might get the result there in about 2 hours, right? So that's why this example is interesting, because it allows us to construct a network so that some service providers can offer their computation powers to the other clients, right? So somebody, if they're short of computation power, they can send the task to the service provider. Okay? Yes? IMI. Well, the full name is remote method invocation, right? So these are the mechanisms provided by Java and C++, right? So if you have two programs using IMI to communicate with each other, and it's normally the case that it has to be the case that on both sides, it must be Java, or they must both be C++. Okay, so if you have a service provider running, using C++, and the other client try to use the service, and that client is actually using Java, that's not going to work, because you can see
that's
that.
Fine. I'm just going to go take any call or something.
Yeah. Okay. So you can see that if the client wants to use the service, the client has to pass some parameters, right? Now, if there's a Java object you try to pass to the service provider, well, because this side is being implemented using C++, does not understand a Java object, right? So that's not going to work. For IMI, the applications residing on both sides, the client and server side, has to be implemented using the same programming language. But for web service, that's different. Now for web service, what happens is that we have a service provider residing on a web server. Okay? So it provides some operations, provides some interface that accepts operations, just like a Java IMI server. But if a client wants to send a request to a web service, now, this request obviously is going to contain some parameters, right? So these parameters being sent would be in an XML format.
Now, generally speaking, they're in XML format. So actually, they are in a text format, right? So the web server, when it receives this request, it will pass this object, it will pass this argument and try to understand the parameters being specified inside. So for web service, it doesn't really matter whether the service is being provided either using Java or using C++. The reason is that the parameter being passed back and forth are in text form, right? So for web service is more generalized, but you have to pay a price for that. The price is poor performance because you have to convert whatever you have into a text format and send it over a network, and on this side you have to convert it back. Well, you have to construct an object so that the implementation on the server side can actually process it. Okay? So in the assignment, you have a server. So whenever a client wants to play the game, first the client needs to tell the server that I'm available, right? So when the client wants to find a player, right, the client would go to the server to find out the locations of that client. So once they find the locations of the client, from that point on, they will communicate directly with each other. They don't have to say, well, when I make a move, I don't have to tell the server that I want to make such a move, then the server forward that request to the other player. That's not the case. Once they know each other, they will play directly. Okay? So they will send messages to each other directly. Yes? You don't have to go through the server. You don't overload the server if you have a lot of players, right? They will just play directly instead of having to interact with the server all the time. Yes?
My next question would be keeping track of like multiple games against people,
people with subscriptions? Multiple games. It's not a problem because whenever a game is finished, they will report back to the server. Yep.
So, let's say the server is empty at the moment, and then the first player connects.
Yeah.
So he waits until someone else connects. Does he still kind of load a timer to check every X second?
No, you don't really have to do this. I mean, the server, well, I mean, when the client registers with the server, you can see that you can tell the server, well, this is my location. Now, if somebody registers, let me know, right? It's like a callback, right? So when somebody registers, the server simply makes a call to the client who wants to know. Yeah, that. Yeah, that's one possible way for you to implement it.
Get
You mean you create an account object and then you register that with the registry.
You import it into the registry and in your code you're gonna actually like find it with an NMAX or with an NMAX in the registry. And,
yeah, so in my code how did I actually look up an account? Yeah, so I guess what I did is that if you want to obtain a reference to an account, you ask the account manager, then the account manager is going to return the reference to the account directly to the client. Okay, so the client doesn't have to look up the account in the IMI registry. Yeah, but well, yeah, you can think it that way. But actually, if you want to make your system secure, you actually need a more complicated mechanism than that. Okay. You actually need some sort of authentication. But really, that's something a lot more complicated than what you can think of at this moment.
With like the account manager, for example, the accounts are still remote objects, aren't they?
Yeah, in our example, they are all remote objects. The account and the account manager are both residing on the server side. Yeah. Now, for the program that we have written so far, they're not encrypted at all. It's possible for you to send them in an encrypted form, but to do that, you actually have to create some sort of pipeline between the client and the server so that this information can be encrypted. Yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago when I taught this course, I actually used one of such examples about how to encrypt the information being sent between client and server. But they all hate it because it's a little bit too complicated, so I have dropped that example. Yeah, I mean, you have to do this somewhere in your program. No. Actually, when you IMA actually allows you to specify some sort of channels. Okay, so that channel actually is a program that allows you to perform encryption or decryption. So actually, the structure is still the same. The structure for you to write an IMA application is still the same, only that when you register the object and when you make a call to the object, you need some extra parameters.
Sorry,
say it again?
Like in the assignment where the clients connect to the server and then they connect to each other, so you've got two clients communicating with each other.
Yeah.
They're effectively acting like servants in a way, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, in that case, I mean, once they start talking to each other directly, they're both clients and servers. So there's no clear cut about client and server. Yeah. Well, I mean, Yeah, I mean, if you actually want to make this program perfect, you have to consider that. But I'm sure plenty of people never come across, a race condition never come across their mind. I mean, for example, say, a client actually, well, say, if you have three clients, right? So, say, at the moment, both clients send a request saying that I want to play a game with you, right? So, in this case, oh no, it can, but some players might don't want to play with certain other players, right? It says that, well, this player has won a lot of games, and I don't really want to lose this game. So when that player actually send me a request, do you want to play a game? I don't really want to play with him, right?
But the server can handle the request and deny all that.
The server still have to interact with the client, right? Still, it's quite possible that, multiple clients want to play with one particular player. I can't really think of a case which is complicated. There are some cases which, there are some cases where it's actually quite tricky for you to handle. If you think more about it, you'll find them. Yeah, that's right. You have all the knowledge that you can for you to do this assignment now. Yes. You mean you want to assign this port manually in your code? It's possible. But I think it's probably better if you leave that to the IMI runtime to assign it for you. Yep.
Will you give us any math
specifications? For this assignment? No. How long is this test efficiency in this case? Right. Okay. For efficiency, that's really, you need to have a lot of clients to test the efficiency. So, certainly not for this assignment. I'm going to talk about efficiency. That's more like, that's something that you need to know in real world programming. That's not necessarily that we can actually test this in our assignment. Yes.
In the assignment, the player one wants to play with player two, and player two ends up playing the same game. As soon as player one initiates, basically the player one.
No, I mean, player two. Well, I mean, when player two receives a request from another player, player two can make a decision about whether I want to play this game or not. Right.
Was that an assumption or was that actually?
I think that's in the specification.
Does the other client get told he won, or do you want to just say the commission is broken, or?
Sorry,
So, like, two clients start their game.
Uh-huh.
And one of the clients kills himself, like, 10 minutes
ago. Oh, okay. Right. Yeah, that's something that you can make a decision yourself and write down that decision in your report. Well, in my specification, I can't really cover all possible eventualities. So there are a lot of cases that it's ambiguous. You can implement it any way that you want, as long as you document your implementation in the report. What happened? I didn't see everything coming.
We give up on frustration, but I think later. Working perfectly now, you didn't even realize you were held hostage in here in the thing. Oh, that's it. When I tried to come back, the lecture theater was locked. With all of you inside, yeah.
Okay.
Security,
royal telling off. Yeah, I mean, normally there would be a lecture here, right?
Well, this was in the booking schedule. The building should have been open.
And the pharmacy administration, I mean, basically had Fitzgerald's given them an earful.